That makes a rather cool-looking audio spike. It looks like a series of spaceships.
Are they all going to Uranus? Oh, what? We're children. Hello, America, how are you? That one didn't work as good. Hello, America, my name is Jeff Hederle.
I'm Nick Melton.
Welcome once again to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. Nick, I'm not going to look at your face for a minute.
Okay.
Because I'm going to let this damned recording apparatus do its thing. Okay. And just talk to you as a purely audio image.
Well, I can see you. You just can't see me.
Isn't that sexy? Anyway, as you can tell, I'm sick. And as I do always. I'm just sick of all the ways that, oh, you mean like perverse, then you're right. okay. But yes, I'm sick, and for the first time, I think, in the history of me being a person who has jobs, I had to take a sick day yesterday, which was an interesting experience. I had to actually call in sick, which I've never had to do for any job ever. It was very strange. It went okay. I mean, no one questioned it. You know, I just have to wonder if maybe they're going to pull a certain person I used to live with and then hold a grudge, but never tell me until it's too late. That's how things...
I like how you consider a job, which is an inanimate sort of entity, it's like a concept, and say that that concept will hold a grudge against you.
It's not the concept. It's the poorly governed people who run the place.
Right.
I probably shouldn't be saying all this because remember, as we talked about, it's in my contract that
I have to say what it is.
It's true. At the beloved National Children's Plaything Emporium, where I have a seasonal position that could, with luck, become a full time position, but doubtful because. Fuck it. They don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. Anyway, Jeff is taking chances. but anyway, talking about, you know, calling in sick. Now I'm looking at you, Nick. I can see you.
Oh.
Talking about calling in sick, though. When you were a fella in the public school system, how often did you, I wouldn't say skip school, but, like, were you an often absent student?
I was never absent.
Were you ever absent? What?
No, I mean, I was only absent on days when I was really sick, but if I felt good enough to go, even if I was sick, I went, and I never skipped on purpose.
I did quite a bit. Not so much in high school, but from elementary to middle school. In my hometown, the public school system is just fucking awful. I think I've mentioned this before. So I spent a lot of days at home away from the teachers who didn't really want to be there, the administrators who were probably, you know, better suited to, you know, raping children somewhere. And
why do you think they were administrators?
That's a good point. I'm dead serious, though. I'm pretty sure a vast majority of the administration of my middle school were pedophiles. Or at least they enjoyed child S&M. I won't go into a story about... I should, actually, because I'm just letting it sit there.
Like, because now I'm horrified and want to know what you're talking about.
There was a period... There was a day, my eighth grade year, very memorable, and were I a smarter man, I would have informed law enforcement or some sort of attorney about it. I was quite often the scapegoat in my middle school. From about the second half of seventh grade on... If something happened that was some sort of misconduct, didn't matter if it was on the other side of the school from where I was, they called me into the office. I'm not joking about that. It sounds cartoonish, sounds like something out of a TV show. It's absolutely true. And I got treated pretty badly. There was one particular day, though, where I was called to the office at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon under the suggestion that I had called a girl a slut, which I didn't. And this required the use of all three, the main principal and the two assistants. It required all three of their presences in this room where we were sitting around a round table, and they were just like, I mean, it was like, you know, everything short of waterboarding. I mean, it was absolutely like they were trying to torture a confession out of me for something I didn't do, nor did it require the kind of passion they were putting into their investigation. So I was in this room, and I won't lie, I started shedding tears because I was like, why is this happening? Because especially after it just goes on for like 90 minutes. Which I'd like to say, you know, give myself snaps because, you know, I'm a tough bastard, and I took it for all that time. But the point is, my mother was waiting out in the car rider line for all this time. I had no idea where I was. So basically, they unlawfully imprisoned me and could technically have been taken to court for it if I had been a smart person and talked to a lawyer. But they also pulled out a tape deck and recorded me crying and telling them that I didn't do it and kept the tape. Yeah, this is how fucked up the public school system is in my town. I can see your face, Nick. And this is absolutely true, once again. But they eventually, like, let me go after, like, you know, I gave in to their threat of, like, 2 weeks of out-of-school suspension for allegedly calling a girl a slut. They just felt like doing that. They were bored. And I go out to the car rider line. I go see my mother. I tell her what happened. A couple days later, she goes to ask for the tape of the recording, and they deny that it exists, or I don't remember, if I feel like she talked to two of them, and one denied that it exists, and the other one said that it had been thrown in the trash. So, you know what, I rarely ever, as you know, Nick, we're all big on anonymity on this show, but I gotta say, I hope you burn in hell Barbara Barker, Robert Joubert, and all the staff of Flat Rock Middle School in Flat Rock, North Carolina. So how do you feel about that, Nick?
Well, I also have a school story that seems vaguely appropriate.
That was an extremely dark opening to our show. We'll have to make it brighter later, but go on.
Well, in high school, there was a friend of mine in band who played the flute, and she and I had, we were friends, we were in the pit, and I used to make fun of her all the time, but I didn't think it was mean. Does that make any sense? Like, let me explain, because, like, okay. I would say, like, things that could be classified as mean, but I didn't mean them to be mean, I meant them, like, jokingly.
Right.
And she would always, like, have a quick, witty retort for me, so I just sort of assumed that what we were doing was vocal sparring, you know?
So you had that classic sitcom repartee I'm not at all saying for the third time.
Jeff, you and your self-referential things that you were going to do.
Yes, because our recording apparatus is a prick. Keep going.
Yes. But anyway, I thought it was sitcom repartee. The thing was, she didn't.
Right.
And rather than tell me that there was a problem, she went to the principal. And I got called into the office, and they were like, "Do you know this girl?" I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, we're in the band together." I'm like, "Well, she came in here crying because she said that you've been, like, bullying her." I'm like, that wasn't my intention. I thought we were just having a friendly back and forth, like, banter, you know? And I felt terrible, and I wrote letters of apology to both her and her parents, and was nice to her after that. But it was not a very nice experience.
But I gotta tell you, that sounds a hell of a lot more civil than anything I ever faced.
Than your story. I mean, your story is way more like, holy shit. Mine is just, I was a douche in high school.
But I mean, it speaks volumes about, like, how different regions will handle their business. Because I think we've already established. I definitely just kind of gave away my location with that rant, but you are in the middle of the state, whereas I am on the west side of the state, they do things a little different in these two places.
Well, you know me, my hometown is one of those places where people would get in an uproar if the teachers ever did anything that could be even remotely misconstrued as, like, abuse to a student, emotional or otherwise, you know?
God, I wish they gave that much of a damn around here.
Well,
I mean,
a lot of the people in my town are feel like they're rich and entitled, you know?
But, in their defense, you are in, like, probably the second most famous city in our state.
Yeah.
So
I love my city, though. I'm really glad that I grew up in it. So.
Oh yeah, I mean you got pretty cool place. There's some prestige to that city.
Yeah. So as you can expect, people like Jesse Helms hated it.
Jesse Helms. Oh crap.
He said that they should put a wall around it and call it the People's Republic of Town.
Oh my god.
Of course, now people can just look up what he called the People's Republic of Town, but...
Let's face it, Nick.
We've both shattered anonymity in the last 5 minutes.
We've done a couple things. I'm gonna blow my nose for the listening public. Here we go.
Nose. No.
I love that my nose also started laughing. And, and that you documented it. Yeah. Well, this is going off to a swimming start.
Oh, yes. But we got all the dark stuff out of the way.
We did. I mean, that was the main, like, non-entertainment topic I had was, like, remember when you were kids and that's right, I said, remember when you were kids, plural.
Kids?
Nothing, I'm being ridiculous. Go on.
Okay. Well... I actually have a little thing that I want to talk about, a little rant. It just occurred to me.
All right.
You actually hadn't heard about this until today. But it was big news, and has been big news for the past couple of days. In, like, Kansas or something, some Midwestern state, this guy came into a school board meeting and held the school board hostage. And he came in there... And he drew a giant V on the wall with spray paint, you know, like from the movie V for Vendetta, because that's a symbol that people just recognize and know what it means.
Have they confirmed that that was, like, his inspiration?
Yeah, they put the cover of the movie on the screen.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, oh, we just did that movie on my podcast. That was my initial response, not the, like, horrors, oh my god, dude, anarchist, you know.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think that symbol would be used as a legitimate anarchy symbol, so I don't know why he felt the need to put it up there.
He was probably a nerd.
Probably. But anyway, he was in there, and he had a gun, and everybody was, like, scared and stuff. And then the security guard came in from the back and shot him in the shoulder. And I think he shot him in the back or something. And he basically, there was a brief shootout. The dude fell and then killed himself. But otherwise, there were no injuries... miraculously, no other bullets hit any of the school board members, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And in the past few days, they've been lauding this guy as, this great hero who saved the school board from this crazy guy. And, you know, the thing is, if the whole thing hadn't been caught on tape, I don't think it would be as big a story.
I definitely see your point.
Because it's one of those things that it turned out all right. There were no injuries. Yeah, the dude killed himself, but he was the bad guy of the story.
Right.
You know, the American public doesn't care that he died. All they care about is that the school board people were saved. If it hadn't been on tape, I guarantee you they would have had, like, a 5-second blurb about it, and that would have been it.
Or it would have just only been in the, you know, whatever Midwestern state news.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been national.
But now that it's on tape and went on the internet and whatnot... It was in Florida. That's where it was. Not at all the Midwest. I was wrong. But, yeah, it got on the internet and people saw it. So they kept thinking it was such a huge deal. And so for the past, like, 2 days, they've had this security guard on, like, every news show doing interviews. And I'm just sitting there thinking he was just doing his job. He's not a hero. This is what a cop does every day.
It's true.
The only reason we're making such a big deal about it is because there's a video on the internet of it actually happening.
Well,
and no one
actually...
would give two fucks if they read a paragraph about it in the newspaper.
Believe it or not, I'm going to say that I do kind of see the point here. Although, as you saw when you first told me about this earlier, my immediate reaction was, sir, you only just told me about this, and I'm already tired of it. But... I have to say this. I think the appeal here, and I agree that it's almost entirely because it's on video that it's getting so much buzz, but I think the appeal of this story is really to the fact that... And honestly, if I were a security guard, I would almost find this offensive. I think the suggestion is the reason why it's such a big deal is because a security guard, not a cop, shot the dude and was the hero of the day. So let's just say Paul Blart... Actually, no, better yet, Ronnie Barnhart is the hero of this story. I'm so glad I just went there. And he'd be the one with the gun, let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
Observe and Report. Listen to Nick's episode on that wonderful film. But the point is, I think that's the big appeal here, is that it's not a cop, it's a security guard. And there is this kind of like public perception that security guards are this lower form of law enforcement that never does anything big and heroic. And I guess that's the grassroots appeal. But from where you're but your main point, that's not the point you're trying to make. The point you're trying to make, I'm totally on board for, which is, once again, the only reason why it's national news is because there's video footage of it.
Yeah, but the thing about security guards, I mean, they're still expected to have to be ready for physical conflict. They're a security guard.
This is true.
And just because they don't have a badge and shield and a nightstick dangling from their belt doesn't make them, in theory, any less of a law enforcement agent than a cop. I mean, it's just that cops are a public organization where security guards are generally private.
Right.
They're private cops, basically. So
I guess it's just...
I don't know. I mean, it's not that... I don't have any hard feelings towards the security guard.
Oh, certainly
I'm
not.
I'm glad
certainly
that
not.
He was able to save this, a bunch of innocent bystanders from this crazy
right.
guy. But I really hate how the media will latch onto a story like this and just drive it home for days and days and days when it and I'm sitting there thinking, surely other things are happening in the world. Other more important things, you know? This already happened days ago. Nobody died, except for the bad guy.
True.
You know. And even then, he wasn't a bad guy. The reason he was there pointing a gun at the school board is because they fired his wife. And I don't know why they did.
You know, that's one of those weird BSG gray area moments.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of like, and especially as we're talking about the ineptitude of public schools. I'm not saying this is like, I'm not justifying what he did, but you know. When something that shattering happens to you and your family, you can go a little nuts. Now, I'm not saying you're allowed to or you should, but I'm saying people do, you know?
Yeah.
So that, it's weird. God, I'm never going to dig myself out of this hole, but I'm not saying it was a good thing, but you can understand how someone can be driven to that point.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, there's just a lot of weird things going on in schools right now. My mom's a teacher, and she was saying how the latest infuriating thing that the school district is doing is they're redistricting everything. They don't want to, like, bus the poor black kids to school anymore. They're basically redrawing...
Just in your city or across the state?
In our district, at least, or in the district of the capital. I don't know how far across the state this goes, but...
Right.
They're basically redrawing the school district lines. They're not saying it, but it's basically to resegregate the schools.
That's gross.
That's basically what's going on, because they don't want to bus the poor urban kids to school because it lowers their test scores or whatever.
Ugh.
But I mean, I've been, being the son of a teacher and being minimally involved in teacher activities for a lot of my life, I hear a lot of, like, the behind-the-scenes bureaucracy and bullshit that comes with being a teacher in the public school system.
Right.
And that system is in many ways quite broken.
I mean,
you've got that whole No Child Left Behind thing, which is bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
It's become all about the test scores. It doesn't matter if the kids actually learn anything. We just want them to pass the test at the end. Because if you can get the right amount of kids to pass the test, those are the schools that are going to get the funding. And if you don't, and if you get a lower number of kids passing the test, you don't get any federal money anymore. So it's all money and bureaucracy, and we're losing sight of the fact that we have such a high illiteracy rate in this country now, and it's stopped becoming about education, and it's just political bullshit.
You know what, Nick?
Yes.
We've been accused of being racist on this show, but let me tell you something, sir. I fucking hate white people. I really do. I'm a self-hating cracker, and I always have been. That's the way that is. We were accused of being racist once.
Well, I was.
You were, unjustly, because someone decided to use our show for personal gain, and we put a stop to that. As you can tell, Nick, as the year closes out and our obligations kind of grow weaker, I'm realizing we have a lot less to lose.
Yeah.
So I'm saying a lot of ballsy
You're
shit on our show.
You're quite honest on these shows these days.
Which I mean, in all truth, listen, I know we're closing out the year, but I'm trying to move us toward a 2011 where I don't say that kind of shit. Right. I'm trying to get us back to like a whimsical kind of, right now we're very much in a Russell T. Davies Doctor Who situation, and we need to get into the Stephen Moffat, which will be next year. Where everything's whimsical and optimistic instead of, you know, constantly mourning his planet or Rose.
Right.
As you heard earlier, I've been going through a very Doctor Who day, talking about it quite a bit with anyone who would listen. And it was an interesting time. But speaking of Doctor Who, you want to talk a little pop culture, sir?
Sure.
I think you know what I'm about to talk about as I head over to my... spaces with regard to my internet browser. Let me make sure we're still running, up and running. You are still there. You're still there. That's still there. Let's dance. Here we go. Bill Pullman joins Torchwood.
I was surprised to see that.
I was delighted. I was as well. I got to tell you,
question before we even get to Bill Pullman.
All right.
Is Torchwood exclusively produced by Starz now? Because that article basically said that it landed at Starz.
No. That article that I showed to you and posted on my Facebook was a bit misleading. The one I found right here that I'm not going to read now because now I'm starting to get nervous about my computer. The one I found here, it notes, as it is, that it's a co-production of both Starz and BBC Wales. So it's still a BBC production. They just now have a little bit of American funding and a bit of an American cast because the next season, season four, is known as Torchwood: The New World, and it is a mixture. It's a tale of two coasts, if you will. It's about the Americans.
A Tale of Two Coasts doesn't have quite as much of a ring to it as A Tale of Two Cities.
Okay, well, it's as far as I've heard, and I could be wrong about the American city, but I think the American city is Washington D.C. Obviously.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And the British city is, of course, Cardiff, Wales. And it's going to be a co-production where we're going to have our three main remaining British cast members. John Barrowman, he's American, but he's mostly British. John Barrowman, Eve Miles, and Kai Owen. And, of course, the fellow who plays PC Andy, whose name I've forgotten. And then on the American side...
So, wait, he's going to be one of the big members now?
It's being implied that he's more of a member in training.
Okay.
That he's kind of like Yanto sans the sex.
Right.
And that he's mostly kind of a coffee boy. but yeah, that's PC Andy next season. But
I
on the
like
American
PC Andy.
I love PC Andy. I wonder about the 5% of people listening to this episode who understand any of what we're saying.
Well, if they do understand, then they are cool. So,
that's true. I mean, it's not like we have a Doctor Who-related podcast to do this on. Or do we?
Well,
no,
not right now.
Not right now, no. we're getting there.
But maybe in the future.
Yes. I'm surprised
I
haven't...
In the world.
Snap. No, that was beautiful. I'm just saying I'm surprised I haven't blown out my voice yet. But anyway, no, in terms of the American cast... There's Bill Pullman, who's apparently going to be the big bad of the season. Descriptions of the character that I've read online say that he is going to be a convicted murderer / pedophile who's been released from prison and sort of decides to start targeting Jack Harkness and then the Torchwood team.
Why?
For whatever reason. We don't know. Russell's got the answers.
How would he know about Torchwood if he's just a serial murderer and pedophile?
Well, who's to say who he murdered or if he's entirely human?
Right. Well,
snip,
let me
snap.
Just say for the record that on paper that sounds like so American. Like
it is a very American idea.
We love our convicted murder pedophile villains.
Well, you have to keep
it
in mind
very Law and Order.
Well, you have to keep
Law
in mind
meets
that
Torchwood.
The writers of this season are a perfect like half and half mixture of British and American.
Yeah, but we've got like Jane Espenson.
That's true.
On the writing staff. And I'd like to give her more credit than Law & Order. Although I love Law & Order, I just feel like it would be a weird mixture, like, to put in with Torchwood.
Right. Well, I mean, all that being said, I'm intrigued to see Bill Pullman play a villain.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think I've ever seen that. I mean, I know it's happened, but I've never seen it personally. The only other American cast member we know of for certain right now is former ER star and a fellow you might have seen in such films as 8 Mile. And I think... And, no. And I think he was... And I think he was also in one of the Fast and Furious. And I think he was... No, he was in that movie... No. And he was also in that movie, Waist Deep. I speak, of course, of Mekhi Phifer. No, that was Tyrese Gibson. I'm racist. They're two...
By the way, I haven't seen any of the things you just named, so...
I'm sure, but I'm just saying they're two very attractive, very well-built, bald, black gentlemen... who are both a very attractive men and have quite lengthy acting resumes. I'm still racist. See, I'm willing to admit it because I actually am. You see, there's a difference. And you're not. You're a stand-up guy, Nick Melton. You know, I said that earlier today for reasons that I'm not going to go into here. But
I think you are more stand-up than you give yourself credit for.
I mean, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I absolutely agree with you. But, you know, sometimes it's the whole thing, and I've always had this about myself, and especially in situations like this where we've come under fire from people trying to, you know, make us patsies, as I said in a previous episode. It's that I'm, you know, it's better to be the person, you know, drawing fire on yourself first, you know.
Well, I think, you know that blog and book Stuff White People Like?
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of brilliant because it skewers white people like perfectly.
We
but,
deserve it.
One of the things that white people like is self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
And I like it. I'm a white person. I like self-deprecating humor.
Well, of course, you know where I got my interviewing style. Matt Lauer? Matt Lauer. No, I forget what that's from. What is that from? That sounds so familiar.
I don't know.
I saw, that's in something I was watching earlier. That's... Oh, God, I'm going
to
hate...
Was it on Gumball to Gumball?
Oh, God, if only. No, but in all seriousness, a great deal of my, like, the way I conduct myself as a host, and we've actually kind of lost a bit of that in this past couple of months of being dragged down by detractors, is Conan O'Brien, of course, who's back, of course, and we proudly advertised his new show on the OUP website. It's very much Conan, and... why are we talking about this?
I don't know. Matt Lauer?
Matt Lauer. Do you remember that episode of South Park? It was the Finger Bang episode. You remember Finger Bang?
Mm-hmm.
I've
been watching a lot of concerning South Park.
What?
The Rob Schneider.
Oh, the German? The German da derpy derp da diddly derpy derpy dum. It's fucking amazing.
It's better in German than it is in English.
Because it's beautiful, because, like, I mean, this is going to sound terrible. Sorry, Germans, but a foreign language will sound like gibberish anyway. So when you put it in that context of a trailer that's supposed to be all gibberish and only a few words of normal English, it's that much funnier, especially considering that, and this is, like, my favorite German word they use for nonsense, is Tittenshow.
Yeah.
Tittenshow is my favorite German nonsense word right now.
Well, you know, I love hearing other language equivalents of nonsense words, because we're like, well, isn't gibberish gibberish in any language? Not really. I mean, some syllables that we say are gibberish, like in English, could be used as part of words in another language.
Right.
So it's sort of interesting to hear what other countries use as syllables and whatnot that are not part of their language.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of moments in that video, and I do urge, since we're talking about it, I do urge our listeners to check it out before we continue. Just go on YouTube and search for South Park Rob Schneider German.
You know what you could do is put it as a stinger at the end of the episode.
Oh, I totally should. Why did you have to recommend it on the air? I wanted to surprise people. Screw it.
You can delete this
part. I'm not going to. People, keep listening. That's happening. Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome.
That's such a brilliant idea. But one thing I do love, though, is, you know, the big, and it's become almost an internet meme in itself, the word derp.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's Rob Schneider, de derp, de derp. And I love that in German, that's Rob derp, Schneider. Derp, derp, derp. I love that in German, it's Rob Schneider, dodo dip.
dodo dip.
Yeah.
Dip, 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 dip.
Tompy Depp, Tit and Joe. we're definitely, that's the stinger at the end of the episode. Look forward to that, listeners. We got a lot of interesting things to look forward to. We did just get kind of personal and kind of dark for a second there. As I said, listeners, we've had a lot of scheduling differences around here. I do want you to understand, listeners, that has not been a response to those dark times. We genuinely have just had a lot of roadblocks in terms of, like, jobs, family get-togethers, distance, things that have made, keeping a pretty steady schedule on both our shows a bit difficult. Our hope is that in the next year we're gonna be a bit more. It's not that we're not trying; it's just that we're hoping in the next year things will move a bit more smoothly. As I said, I'm hoping we get out of this dark spot and get into a brighter, more optimistic spot by the new year. We have one more conversation left in this year on our show, I'm hoping that we'll have gotten all of our demons out by that point. I feel bad because we had that episode back in I think it was March that. The Talking Cure Part 3, No Relation, referencing that episode of Smodcast where Kevin Smith was like really, really down in the dumps about Zach and Miri not making as much money as he wanted to in the opening weekend. And, cough. Anyway, but anyway, that was supposed to be our darkest hour in a way, and I keep dragging it down. I apologize. Let's talk about something happier.
Rob Schneider.
Dip.
Derpy, dirty, derpy, derp.
Yes.
Until one day.
Derpy, dirty,
derpy, derp.
All right, let's move on. Thank you, Nick.
You're welcome
for pulling us out of that dark spot. We're trying to make a brighter day. And we're going to, in our next episode, and believe it or not, I want to talk about something that's a bit related to that. I'm going to go ahead and spill the beans because it's going to kind of give you a dead giveaway when we talk about what we're about to talk about. Next week, we have a very special double-length episode for you folks on Christmas Eve, in which we'll be looking at the first two and only good Home Alone pictures, both written by John Hughes and directed by Chris Columbus. And concluding our month of Columbus with our two movies, or three movies, that we've done of Chris Columbus. We do hope you enjoyed our I Love You, Beth Cooper episode last week. Next week we'll be talking about Home Alone. And in this time, we already recorded this episode a couple weeks back. The Time Travel of Podcasting, we always talk about it. We already recorded these episodes, so this is actually, in a weird way, kind of a prologus epilogue, if you will.
Did you just make up a word?
I have to imagine...
Prologus.
Prologus.
Like a prologue, but with us at the end.
Well, because you've heard of analogous.
Yeah.
So I think, wouldn't it be prologus if it's like a prologue?
I guess. I've never heard anybody use that phrase before.
I win. Anyway, it's a bit of an epilogue that you're going to hear before the actual thing happens. We're going to Tarantino it. We're going to give you this ending first, and then you've got to go back and listen to the beginning next week.
It's like Memento.
It's like Memento, yeah. Anyway, Christopher Nolan. Anyway, I found an article this week that delighted me greatly, an article entitled 12 Things You Probably Didn't Know About the Movie Home Alone.
That's awesome.
I discovered this, I believe, on the sidebar of Television Without Pity when I was reading a Mad Men recap. I should mention on the air, since we're there, that I have recently concluded a 2-month-long marathon viewing of one episode a day of the entire series thus far of Mad Men, and it has been wonderful.
My mom still can't get into Mad Men.
It's like I said when I first started doing the marathon, the Mad Men a Day, as I called it on my Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at biscuitman18. When I was doing Mad Men a Day, I was reminded because I had actually tried to watch the show before about 2 summers ago at the University of Choice. I rented the discs from the school video store and only got through about the first 3 episodes before I just kind of gave up because the first 3 episodes. And this is not to the show's like discredit because they're still good episodes, but they're all set up. Like the first 3 episodes are all like, setting the stage and setting up, like, the tone of the show. This is how it is. It's the 60s. Men treat women like objects. And, you know, women have to work harder to get ahead in the 60s. And Don Draper likes a lot of ladies. That's basically the first three episodes. And then from there on out, it's, like, an ongoing story. And it gets just gets better and better and better. So if you can get to the first three episodes, you could definitely get to the rest of the show. Because it's, as many people have noted, the best drama on television. And I'll stand by that, actually.
Well, my mom, I think, has gotten past those first three episodes, and she thinks that the writing on that show lacks subtlety. Like,
really?
She gets it. Like, the women are treated like objects all the time, and the men smoke all the time, and the men drink all the time, and they're assholes, and they're men in suits, and they make advertisements. Like, she doesn't see why people love, like, just that when, like, eh. She can't understand why people like the show so much when that's really all she can see in the show. Like, how blunt they're just being with all of that.
I mean,
the
first season is a lot more heavy on that. I guess we'll talk about Mad Men for a second. The first season is a lot heavier on that. But like I said, as the show goes on, it becomes less and less about that and becomes more about, you know, unraveling the mystery that is Don Draper, which is a very intriguing mystery indeed. You know, all of the various relationships that he has, and like the psychological deterioration of a lot of characters. Like, that's one of the big things is, like, it's weird because you can see that all these people have this, like, massive downfall on their way, you know, and it's very tragic and very dark, but it's so smooth. And I don't know if I've mentioned this, but John Hamm is fucking sexy.
I don't agree, but this is not news.
It's not news. You continue to astound me with the way you feel for John Hamm. You're not buying it. You're not in.
I'm not. I mean, I think he's a delightful actor and a delightful person, but, you know, I've just never found, like, leading men that attractive.
There's something about him. I mean, I guess it's just that Don Draper smooth badassery that, you know, makes my, really snaps my bean, you know what I'm saying?
That's an interesting expression.
It certainly is.
Like, for example, I was talking to you earlier this evening, and there's a show that I was watching called Criminal Minds.
Ah, yes.
And there's a character on that show played by Shamar Moore.
Shamar Moore.
Do you know who that is?
I do, because, he was on Birds of Prey, and he was on The Young and the Restless, and he hosted Soul Train for a long time.
Well, my mom really likes him.
I can understand
She thinks he's a dreamy human being.
He is.
Those aren't her words, those are my words. And I've been, like, the anti-Shamar Moore for however long we've been watching the show, and she thinks it's because I'm just being ornery and don't want to admit who I find attractive. But no, that's not the case.
Does that conversation come up a lot? Well, this is actually an interesting thing I've never asked you. Is that a concept that comes up a lot in conversations with, like, your mother? Like, I mean, she knows you're a proud homosexual motherfucker, but do you have conversations about gentlemen?
No, not really. Because usually whenever she mentions, like, someone she finds attractive or whatever, I don't agree with her.
Right.
And then I don't go into any more detail. Or she asks me, and then I just don't really feel comfortable telling her. So we don't really have in-depth conversations about it. But, I mean, you know, the kind of person that I would find attractive on that show is the character of Reed, played by Matthew Gray Goober.
I was about to say, yes.
That's my type. You can have your hunky leading man, America. I'll take the cute nerds.
Like Matt Smith.
Like Matt Smith, exactly. Go.
Yes.
Matt Smith. Who we had on The Nerdist, and it was delightful.
Yes, The Nerdist. One of the many podcasts that we
espouse. The latest episode of The Nerdist has Billy West on it.
I noticed. I haven't gotten to it yet, but...
Yeah, me neither, but I'm like, the longer that podcast goes on, the more excuses I have to listen to it. Like, I should have been listening to it anyway, because
you know,
I'm quite fond of Chris Hardwick. But
aren't we all?
We are, yeah.
While we are talking about podcasts, though, we still haven't even gotten to this Home Alone article. While we are talking about podcasts, though, I do want to mention one more podcast, mainly so I can finally officially put it up on the website as one we recommend. And I told you about this, Nick, and I stunned you with this news as I stare at the top of your head. You always do that, and all of a sudden I just see this black mass of hair at the bottom of the screen. But anyway, I want to talk about another podcast that I'd like to put on our list of OUP recommends podcasts, And believe it or not, it is a podcast known as Tom Green Live at the Smod Castle. People know Tom Green. He was the fella who did all those crazy shenanigans 11 years ago and became a household name.
No one that I knew liked.
People liked, but also people despised him, and I would say for good reason on both counts.
I despised him.
Yeah.
Can I stop this?
Yeah.
Does anyone out there like me yet?
But, I mean, he's had his share of ups and downs. He had the show on MTV. He had testicular cancer. Then he went away for a few years. He did Freddy Got Fingered, which is a very much despised film. Although, it's interesting, just for a second to point out, though, that, and I don't think it's just like ass kissery, because I've actually also heard it, I believe, on Doug Loves Movies, that movie has developed quite a cult following.
What movie?
Freddy Got Fingered has developed quite a cult following in the comedy community. With people, and I mean, I'm willing to argue either way on this, because I actually kind of want to see it now because of all the people who've said this. A lot of people, and people I respect too, have said that, you know, he's a bit outrageous and he does a lot of stuff that's purely for shock value. But a lot of people have said that there are shades of like the brilliance of an Andy Kaufman in what he did. Because he did some crazy shit. I mean, there's no doubting it. So, I mean, I kind of want to view it with those eyes and see what happens. I've never seen it in general, but I'd like to see what happens. But anyway, Tom Green, I mean, people know him for that kind of shit. And, of course, he had another talk show on MTV back in 03 that didn't last nearly enough. And back then, that was actually definitely a lot more of the Tom Green personality we get now, where he's realized, when I was a young man, or when I was younger, I did a lot of stupid shit. on television and made a complete ass of myself. And now I'm going to own up to it and try to be a bit more professional. And that's kind of his bag now, which is very endearing, and it plays very well into what he does. Tom Green Live at the Smodcastle, which is not, oddly enough, on smodcast.com, but you can find, I'll leave a link to it on the Smodcastle website. It's just Tom Green and various comedians, mostly of the alternative comedy world, coming together for about an hour and a half every week. Just the two of them on the stage, two stools, two mics, a couple bottles of water, just two dudes talking about the craft of comedy. And it is genuinely one of the most insightful and intriguing podcasts I've ever listened to. I've listened to a lot of great stuff. Every now and again, he'll have a guest on who's kind of like on his level of humor, and they'll go into some wacky flights of fancy. But it's actually very entertaining. Harlan Williams or this great up-and-coming Canadian comedian named John Doerr. Who a lot of people may have seen on Conan a few weeks ago. But it's an absolutely wonderful...
Has Kyle Kinane ever been on the podcast?
Not yet, but I'm telling you, that's the kind of people that, he's getting. These up-and-coming, alternative comedians who are, really have a really interesting voice and just, talking about their craft and, all this stuff. It's a fascinating listen, and I absolutely recommend it. Don't let the fact that it's Tom Green fool you. It is actually one of the more insightful.
That's really the only reason I haven't listened to it yet.
Right.
Because it's Tom Green.
Exactly. But I'm telling you, don't let that fool you. I mean, if you just get bored and you run a podcast, which admittedly you probably won't. But definitely if you're up for, kind of having your mind blown and being surprised by, the transformation of Tom Green into this very insightful host with these great comedians, check it out. Tom Green Live at Smodcastle. But enough promoting that fella. Let's, Nick, say something first.
Eggplant parmesan.
Okay. You just hadn't spoken in a while, and I felt bad about it. So now I'm gonna take a risk, Nick. I'm gonna do what I do and switch over to my browser and read this list of 12 things you probably didn't know about the movie Home Alone. Are you ready, Nick?
Did you know that in the movie Home Alone, he was actually not alone? Because there were people on set that weren't just him.
You son of a bitch.
Did you know that in the movie Home Alone, one of the burglars is played by Joe Pesci?
Did you
know that in the movie Home Alone, the actor who played Kevin was actually 45?
You know what you're reminding me of right now?
What?
You remember on Bill Nye the Science Guy, when they would do those segments that was, did you know that? And then someone would say something, and then it was like, now you know! Do you remember that?
No, but I love Bill the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy was the shit, but you know what else was the shit?
What?
Home Alone.
Home Alone.
Which,
did you know that in the movie Home Alone, there's a scene where he puts on aftershave, and then slaps his face and screams?
Can I move on to this, Nick?
Okay, I was going to say antifreeze, but...
I would have totally gone with it. I would have totally gone with it.
Antifreeze.
All right, here we go, ladies and gents. It's time for 12 things you probably didn't know about the movie we'll be covering next week on this very program on Christmas Eve, Home Alone. Number one, the picture Kevin finds of Buzz's girlfriend was actually a picture of a boy made up to look like a girl because director Chris Columbus thought it would be too cruel to make fun of a girl like that. Which I can totally see. you remember the picture of Buzz's girlfriend?
Woof.
Yes, Buzz, your girlfriend. Woof. Yes, of course. Number two, and this one's very interesting considering how much we talk about him next week. Not the actor, but as mentioned, but the character. The role of Uncle Frank was written for TV's Kelsey Grammer. Hey, baby. Could you imagine?
I can't find it hard to believe Kelsey Grammer could play such a douchebag.
Well, I mean, I love Kelsey Grammer. I love what he does with his Frasier, you know, but and Beast.
And him falling off of stages.
And saying, oh, good Lord. but I got to tell you, in real life, I've heard that he's kind of a Republican dickbag. So I can actually totally see it.
That makes me sad.
It is very sad. But yes, Kelsey Grammer. And I know what music cue I just played underneath it, so wonderful.
Is it, Baby, I Hear the Blues Again?
Yes.
Toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Indeed. Mercy. Number three, there is a legend that Elvis Presley, who died in 1977, made a cameo in the movie. Many of those who believe that Elvis is still alive maintain that the heavily bearded man standing in the background of the scene where Catherine O'Hara is shouting at the desk clerk just before she meets John Candy's character is Elvis Presley.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I would have never thought about that, but I've watched, like, they actually have a picture of the scene, and they have a YouTube clip underneath the listing, and they talk about it. And I've watched it, and I gotta tell you, what? I don't see how what people are looking at and saying, oh, that's him. That's Elvis.
You saw the bearded guy.
I saw the bearded guy. There's a picture of him. I'll send you a link after we finish recording so you can see it for yourself. But there's this bearded guy behind Catherine O'Hara that they say is Elvis. Just randomly.
He doesn't look like him.
Not remotely. And he's standing behind her at the Scranton airport. But anyway, here we go. Number four. The issue of Playboy that Kevin finds in Buzz's chest is from July 1989 with future Ellie Mae Clampett, Erica Eleniak, as Miss July. You probably know what none of that means.
I know what you referred to the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes, in the Beverly Hillbillies movie.
I assume you're talking about the movie Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes, the movie with Jim Varney and Rob Schneider. Were you aware that Rob Schneider was in the Beverly Hillbillies movie?
I wasn't.
Sometime we gotta watch that movie.
Tum-ti-tiddly-tum-ti-doo.
Yeah, we gotta watch the Beverly Hillbillies because that movie holds a very special place in my heart. I love a lot of those, you know, early 90s TV show adaptations.
Families, comedies.
Yeah, those and the Brady Bunch movies. Most of the first one, not the second one. The only problem is it'd be hard to watch the Brady Bunch movie with you, as we mentioned before, because you never watched the show a day in your life.
Yeah.
The only exposure to the Brady Bunch you have is all, like, the references they make on Family Guy.
Yeah.
Bobby, get back
Bobby,
in the garage!
Get back in the garage!
Oh, God. Okay, number five, the evil furnace in the basement was done by two dudes with fishing line and flashlights. That's a fact everyone needed to know. Number six, and this one I think is fascinating, the role of Harry, actually played by Joe Pesci, was originally offered to and turned down by Mr. Robert De Niro.
Yeah, that would have been too much star power for the role.
Probably, yeah. But the other thing is, I mean...
I don't know. Robert De Niro seems a bit too menacing for that role.
He seems a bit too menacing, but this is also back before he started doing comedies. Like, this is back when This is hardcore Scorsese De Niro we're dealing with right here.
Also, when did Cape Fear come out?
Cape Fear came out in 93.
Okay, so it would have been after this.
Yeah, so but still, I mean, even at that point, like, all he had to his name that people knew him from was, like, you know, Goodfellas, The King of Comedy, and Taxi Driver, Deer Hunter. Like, these were all, like, these hardcore De Niro performances, and it wasn't until, you know, Analyze This that, you know, he started making with the funny. A what?
I love Analyze This.
I don't know how to feel about that movie. I watched Analyze This for a paper I wrote. I was taking a mafia course, as you may remember, at the University of Choice about two semesters ago. And I watched Analyze This and compared it to this Italian mafia movie called Mafioso. A great movie, by the way. But I watched Analyze This, and because of what we had been taught in that course, which was that, you know, you're not supposed to laugh at the mafia because they're a very serious terrorist organization, it became a lot more difficult to find the funny in that movie. But, I mean, I wrote a whole paper about it. I wish I had it, like, at hand so I could read you some quotes. But I don't know how I felt about that movie. I would like to see Analyze That just because it exists.
Analyze That is as good as the first one.
Oh, sir, I would agree. And I haven't even seen it, but I've heard. Number 7 on this list of the 12 things you didn't know about Home Alone. Angels with Filthy Souls, the fictional gangster film in the film, was made specifically for the film. There's also a sequel to the film, Angels with Even Filthier Souls, in the sequel. Who doesn't know that?
I was about to say, I knew that.
Here we go. This is kind of interesting. Number 8, the Tog Boy, originally conceived as a non-working prop for Home Alone 2, was made into a real version in 1993 after a massive letter-writing campaign by young fans of the film.
Since I owned a Talk Boy, I know that they made real ones.
But I didn't know that like, it had originally just been intended to be a prop in the movie, and that they actually were, like, forced by the fans to make it a real thing.
You'd think they would have done that anyway, because that was such a no-brainer.
Actually, here's the thing about this fact I kind of want to call bullshit, because I swear... that the Talk Boy came out at the same time as the movie. Like, as a promotional tool.
Up, I guess.
And that I got it the same year. I'm not so sure. Admittedly, this is not from, like, the most reputable website. This is from a website called Film Drunk. But anyway, number 9. John Candy filmed his part in only one day over a course of 23 hours. And the story he tells about once having forgotten his son at a funeral home was entirely improvised.
I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. John Candy...
I mean, he's only in the movie for, like, 5 minutes.
Right, but I mean, and I'm not saying this is, like, the greatest improv ever, but in all seriousness, though, John Candy was one of the greater, you know, improv comedians of his time, because, of course, he worked with Second City for many years, and, of course, was on SCTV for with all those folks, Catherine O'Hara and Joe Flaherty, Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis, all those fellas. And lady, the one lady, there was there was another lady on that show, Andrea Martin, but I've kind of decided to forget about her because everything she's done since has been terrible. Well, let's see, number 10, in the scene where Harry, played by Joe Pesci, bites Kevin's finger, Joe Pesci actually bit Macaulay Culkin, leaving a scar on his finger.
Poor Macaulay Culkin.
So Joe Pesci really took a bite out of that young child star. That sounds...
That's kind of awesome.
That sounds sexy. number 11. The concept for the movie originated during the filming of a scene in a movie that I've talked about a number of times, Uncle Buck, when Macaulay Culkin's character interrogates a would-be babysitter through a letterbox on a door. We really do need to watch Uncle Buck, because there's so many references to it, not just in Home Alone, but in our conversation about it, and all the time. I talk about that movie quite a bit. And finally, number 12, with regard to a fellow that I love, that I adore quite a bit, Mr. Daniel Stern agreed to have the tarantula put on his face for exactly one take. He had to mime screaming because the noise would have scared the spider, and the scream was dubbed in later.
That's a pretty cool little factoid.
Yes. But is it really?
I didn't think about it for a second, but I mean,
I really kind of.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like I just wasted everybody's time with that. 2011, the year of Jeff regaining his confidence. That's definitely that's
that doesn't really quite have a ring to it, does it?
Yeah,
it's just a bit too long.
But which is exactly
Dear Jeff regaining his confidence.
That's exactly how long it needs to be. Have you met me?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh boy. But that's that list. I don't want to end.
Awesome.
I don't want to end here because it's such a like a really that's all you got, Jeff. I guess we can talk about one more thing in the fact that the year is closing out. So next week we got the Home Alone double episode coming up on Christmas Eve. With all fingers crossed, and as long as everything goes according to plan, you've got a little special something coming their way on Christmas Eve as well.
Oh, yes.
Then the next week, I'm going to go ahead and start promoting this kind of backhandedly, but of course, I'm going to go ahead and say this. On New Year's Eve, we've got what is going to become a yearly tradition for our show. It's our special Mike's Hard Year That Was episode. As myself, Mr. Nick Melton, will imbibe various Mike's Hard alcoholic beverages and discuss the year that was. So that's going to happen, and then you've got a very special film for that night as well that we should probably wait to reveal.
Yes.
But it is regarding a special year of thing that almost happened, in a way. And then, of course...
didn't happen at all.
And yes, and then, of course, we kick off... the new year on that Saturday with the first episode of the OUP of the new year as we start a month of films as part of the great almost did it the best movie of all time almost stole the real one focusing on an actor that we've discussed quite a bit tonight and coming up next week as well that I adore so enjoy that I don't know why I just went into promotional mode to stretch for time but you know, while we're stretching for time, why don't we say this? You know, our greatest traffic for this show has actually moved away from our official website at originalunoriginalpodcast.blogspot.com. Find us on Facebook, the Original Unoriginal Podcast, which has definitely almost become the official hub of this show. I mean, the website is almost just for show at this point. it's almost just there to hold the episodes. So do check out our Facebook group and like us on Facebook. We're really trying to get the feedback going. We haven't gotten as many comments on the old iTunes store as we would have liked. But we're getting there. We're a work in progress. We've only been running for about 2.5 years. It's been a fun ride. Why am I saying it like we're stopping? Like it's over. Like we're ending. Jesus. I need to get my voice back so I don't sound like this. And I'm sure that I've actually been compensating for my sickness by being extra loud. Which has probably been terrible for these people. 2011, the year Jeff gets his confidence back.
Regains his confidence.
The year Jeff regains his confidence.
How Jeff got his groove back.
Yes, yes! That's 2011. Mark it, put it on a shirt. That's happening in 2011. We're going to work
you know,
all our...
I love those t-shirts that have Christopher Walken's face on them. They didn't say, I'm walking on sunshine.
Yeah, that shirt, and I'd appreciate. I liked your comment, and I agree with you. There should also be a shirt that says "You might as well be walking on the sun." that's a pretty fantastic idea. Oh boy, I think
because
we're
Smash Mouth is still really cool these days.
I mean, they got some moments, but I mean, they did sell out, and they did you know become kind of a joke. That's
they
what you get
a joke
when you
even when that song came out.
That's what you get when you become a regular on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Ew.
Snap. If there's one message that our listeners can take away from this year, it's that Jay Leno can go fuck himself with an iron stick.
And New York and everyone from there.
Go fornicate yourself with an iron stick. Well, anyway, that was a really weird, rambly way to end the show. But next week we aren't as rambly because we're talking about, as mentioned, both the first two Home Alone pictures, the only two good ones. We do briefly discuss the existence of the second, of the third and fourth. Yes, there was a fourth. If you didn't know already, there was a horrible fourth. But we do talk about the first two, of course, the original and Lost in New York, the second outing. That's coming up next week on Christmas Eve. We do hope you enjoy that. We're going to get this show back to, like I said, we're a little too far into the... you know, the complete specials, Russell T. Davies era of our show. It's time to get back into the Stephen Moffat, everything's optimistic and Amy Pond is adorable universe. It's time to get back there with our show. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Melton?
I agree.
I feel like it's been very awkward lately. But no more awkward than this ending. I'm sick. That's that. I hope you endured it, folks. Next week will be so much better. I will definitely be less sick because we recorded it a week ago. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's the OUP for this week, I guess. I'm Jeff Hedderly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days and get well soon, me.
Rob Schneider, der Dödeldepp. Dödli Depp und Tumpi Depp. Bis dann eines Tages zum Dämmeldödel Tumpi Depp wird. Der Dämmeldödel Tumpi Depp. Von den Machern der total tump-tittengeilen, tödlich traurigen Tittenshow. Rob Schneider ist der Dämmeldödel Tumpi Depp in der total tump-tittengeilen, tödlich traurigen Tittenshow.